We are less than a week away from Christmas, less than 2 weeks away from New Year's, which means you might have some cooking to do for a lot of people, which is not as easy as whipping up dinner for two or four. But Mary White has some tips. She's the author of Cooking for Crowds, and the 40th edition is just out in bookstores now. Mary joins us in the studio. Mary White, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Well, first of all, you say in the book that when you are trying to cook for a big crowd, you might want to start with your floor. That's where you should actually put all the ingredients together.
Yeah, only if the Board of Health isn't observing you at the time. But yeah, in those days, there wasn't too much inspection of the caterer's realm. So my daughter and I, who was, I think, age 6 and 7 at the time, we would wash the lettuce in the bathtub. You should clean it first. And then toss it in bed sheets on the floor.
And one of the biggest challenges, I would imagine, is the gear that you would need. I imagine a lot of people have a pan big enough to cook, you know, a lamb curry for 6, but maybe not for 50.
Right. Well, one of the things that I did have to do, and pretty much the only change to my kitchen from my ordinary graduate student supplies, was the size of pots. I ended up, in fact, buying large pots. I still had that 4-burner stove that most people had in the day. Sometimes I had to use 2 burners for one of those pots. But, you know, you just made do. I was doing a lot of things that with my hands that you could now do with a Cuisinart. We didn't have Cuisinarts. We didn't have most kinds. I mean, I think I had the first blender. It was an Osterizer or something. And a lot of things that we take for granted, we just spent lots more time. That was the big factor. Make sure you have enough
time. Takes a lot more time. Now, you start off with a section on soups, and I thought, oh, well, that makes sense. Of course, if you're cooking for a lot of people, you just make the soup bigger. Is it that simple?
Oh, expanding a dish is kind of tricky. Some of the things are straight mathematical, you know, multiplication, but a lot of things aren't. The use of spices, for example, can't simply be multiplied because some of them have, especially if you're making a dish ahead, a lot more power as they rest. So there's where, you know, cooking something for the first time doesn't really work when you're cooking for 50 people. You might want to try it out. Indeed, I would advise everybody to do a menu that you can do 3 days ahead, 2 days ahead, 1 day ahead, and then the salad at the end.
Then if something goes horribly, horribly wrong, you have time to fix the problem.
Yeah, or send out.
Well, tell us about some of your early mistakes, because, of course, as we said, this is the 40th anniversary edition. You've had a lot of experience over the years in cooking for crowds. Where have you gone wrong?
In the past, I went wrong a lot. I still go wrong. I think the disaster that I remember best, and because it had such a good resolution, I was making this amazing Ukrainian pork soup, which was like a main dish. It was almost stew-like, and lots of everything in it. I mean, it had caraway seeds and pork and cabbage and a lot of onions and garlic, and it was redolent. It was a fabulous dish. So I brought over a kettle big enough for 50. It was going to be the main course for lunch with delicious bread and salads and all kinds of things. I put it on the stove to heat up again. And I went out into the dining room to see if how the setup was going. So the first thing I noticed was this acrid burn, the stink coming from the kitchen.
Uh-oh.
So you've never smelled anything worse than the acrid burn of cabbage. It's really, really terrible. So yeah, rush back into the kitchen, take it off the stove, open all the windows. Then I did my usual thing, which was to sit on the floor and start sobbing.
Oh.
And there was no recourse. I couldn't think of anything. My brain went blank, and I thought, this is disaster. But the usual thing I did besides crying was call up the cook down the block, who happened to be Julia Child.
That's lucky.
Man, was it ever. And she had told me that I could call her. She had said, you know, if you ever get into trouble, I will not do her voice, but, you know, if you ever get into trouble, just call.
So what'd she say?
So I said, through my tears, I told her what had happened. She said, all right, here's what you do. Mobilize. Get somebody to run to the shop up the block and get as much sour cream as you can get lemons, and get parsley. Okay, so I says, what are you going to do? What do you do with this? And she said, well, grate the lemon rind and squeeze the lemon into this pot. I said, what's that for? And she said, lemon will do a substitute aroma thing. It will sub in for the burned and will give you a hit of a different flavor. And then she said the sour cream has fat. It coats your tongue. It removes the chance of the acrid burning into your taste buds. So you've got these two things happening. I said, what's the parsley for? And she said, oh, silly. The parsley's to make it look pretty.
See, and that's all parsley is ever for, isn't it? Really? I mean, what is parsley for?
I'm sure we'll get arguments on that.
Right, well, you can send them to us at hereandnow.org. Did anyone notice, by the way, that the soup wasn't exactly what you thought it was going to be?
Nobody thought, because Julia gave me the final word on how to present it. She said, put it in your best tureen, carry it into the dining room where the waiting hordes are very hungry, and you say, the dish of the day is smoked borscht.
Now, Mary, as we said, this book came out in 1974. Have the recipes had to change? Have you looked at any of these and said, nobody's going to eat this anymore?
The recipes have had a remarkable long life, and part of the reason is when I was cooking for this center full of Europeanists, I was doing my damnedest not to cook European, at least not haute cuisine, which they might have had. I wanted to cook things they couldn't compare to things they'd had. So as a kind of clumsy strategy, it worked pretty well because I was cooking Indian food, I was cooking food from Afghanistan, which people weren't eating then yet, unless, you know, that was the era in which only ethnics ate ethnic food. So these people were not going to know what I was doing.
Yeah.
So that was one really important thing. The other thing is that since I was a home cook stretching my way, I had access to the ingredients that anybody could get now and then. Now, of course, one of the things you can't do now that we had to do then was call tofu soybean curd. Hmm. If you said soybean curd in a recipe now, nobody would know what you meant. But if you said tofu, which you now can say, that would pass. We couldn't say coriander. We had to say Chinese parsley.
Really?
Yeah. People didn't know coriander unless, of course, they came from a coriander eating place.
Huh.
So there were a lot of things that were really a matter of familiarity wasn't there yet. I was helped by a lot of people because a lot of my friends had grandmothers and great-grandmothers from places where these foods were normally eaten. So I just culled recipes from the best grandmothers I could find, and that helped a lot and still is a good strategy.
Number one tip for somebody who has never cooked for a crowd before and is worried about it is listening to this saying, oh, I could never do that. That's too much for me.
Take a long walk and a nap and settle the menu to be something that you can make ahead. Make sure you've got some good music while you're cooking. Don't cut your fingers.
Mary White, author of Cooking for Crowds, which was first published in 1974, and the 40th anniversary edition is out now. Mary, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Not bad, is it, having Julia Child down the street from you, Robin?
And Irving Street, by the way, misses her terribly. I'd like to add another tip for large crowds of the holidays. Order out. I'm
pizza.
Just saying.
Or whatever. From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Robin Young. This is Here and Now. Funding for Here and Now comes from the Institute of Contemporary Art with Amy Selman. One Lump or Two, Vivid Abstract Paintings and Drawings, closes January 5th, ICABoston.org.